Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Andre Kleiner. It's a pleasure to have you on the show again today.
Thanks for inviting me.
All right, no problem. It's, you know, one of the, let me back up a little bit, is this morning I'm in bed and our furnace, this should come on. We have it set with a thermostat so that it should increase in temperature about 6 o'clock in the morning. It's, well, at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it didn't come on this morning. And it has a history now, since we've been using it this winter, of not starting in the morning occasionally. And so I started tracking, you know, at first I started tracking just time to failure, but I don't have an hour meter on it. I don't know how often it's running, all that kind of stuff. So that was kind of really rough estimate. Is that just me, Andre? Do you track stuff like you were doing an experiment at work?
Yeah. Well, speaking of my furnace, I was lucky. It's still running.
Well, that's good. I'm in California. I mean, it's 35 degrees outside, which is really cold here, which would be nice there.
If furnace stops running here in Indiana in the wintertime, yeah, you're in trouble.
That's right.
But we track a lot of data coming from field. In form of warranty data, we also have remanufacturing centers where we actually can get a lot of data based on failures and the component failures. And actually, we can get pretty detailed from our reman centers what actually is failing, and this information is pretty useful.
Well, that's the heart of what I think a reliability engineer does, is we deal with data. You know, we talk about failure mechanisms. We might be in charge of doing failure analysis. But oftentimes, even if we're doing a failure analysis, the question's going to be, well, how many in the field are going to fail for that cause, right? And so that's based on our experiments, our data, our understanding of how that failure mechanisms occurs. We're almost always dealing with data and its analysis. And a lot of times it's the variability. In our last episode, Andre, we were talking about you had a change in how the electronics was being used from what you typically had. And I'm quite sure that the estimates of how often the charging system of an electric vehicle or hybrid vehicle gets used is an estimate. It may have a normal distribution about it, right? There's some people that hardly ever use it, and there's other people that use it 20 hours a day.
This information is important. Like, generally, we're speaking about statistics, right? Mm-hmm. And statistics is very important in reliability engineering. And you and I chatted that sometimes reliability engineers kind of hesitant to use statistics. And there's several different ways where statistics, I think, has to be used in reliability engineers' practice, basically tracking the field data would be one of them. Mm-hmm. But even testing, how many samples you test is also based on statistics. But going back to your question, is we have what's called usage distribution, a user severity, which especially is important in automotive engineering because, yeah, everybody's driving their vehicles a different way. Mm-hmm. And simply you look at how many miles you drive, and you have a pizza delivery guy who is on the far end of that spectrum, who may drive, I don't know, 20, 30, 40,000 miles a year. And we have what we call a little old lady who drives to church on Sunday, who drive very few miles. Well,
but I'm laughing, Andre, because I didn't drive to church, but the first time I got in my car for 2 weeks was yesterday. I'm kind of going to fall into that bucket of a little old lady.
Little old lady.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been over a month since I put fuel in the car. I just have not. I've been working at home. I've been focused on a bunch of stuff locally. My clients aren't making me get in the plane or go to the site. So I haven't had a need to drive. And so, yeah, I'm in that end of the spectrum at the moment. I should probably let my insurance company know that I'm.
Yeah, yeah, you may get a better rate.
That's right.
Especially in California. Yeah, but obviously we cannot design the car for a little old lady. But
or
the
me.
Same time, yeah, or you. But at the same time, we cannot design it for a pizza delivery guy because, if we design that car for that person, we basically end up with a Hummer, like a tank or something.
Well, there's cars that are like police vehicles, right? Aren't those stock cars, but then they're modified for the for police car driving, for squad car driving?
There's some modification, but technically, if you have like a high mileage user, then they end up changing cars more often.
Hmm. I'm thinking of taxis. I visited Vancouver, British Columbia a few years ago, and every taxi was a Prius.
Oh.
You know, and part of it was the city made it an incentive, I guess, to drive a hybrid or less fuel and less emissions type stuff, and the high mileage vehicles were that. But I don't think Priuses were designed to be taxis. I'm thinking of London. They have a specific model of car that is the London taxi, and it's probably optimized for the high mileage stuff.
Yeah, I hope so. I can't tell you much about modifications of vehicles for that purpose. But kind of going back to the old topic, I mean, what we were discussing before, we cannot design the car for everybody. So we're looking at the high user. We're not looking at average user, but we're looking at a high user somewhere like between 95th and 99th percentile user. So we cover the majority of drivers out there, and to basically know who is our 95th or 99th percentile driver, we need to collect a lot of data, do statistics, fit a distribution, and estimate what constitutes that high-end driver.
That's right. And that's all the different stresses and environmental stresses and all kinds of things.
Right, yeah. What would be the vibration for that driver? Or what would be a temperature? What would be the mileage? And most of the time, it's a log normal distribution, at least in my experience, because I process a lot of those data.
Right.
And you need to be comfortable with doing some statistics, at least.
Well, that's where I kind of why I added this topic to the list, is that in the forums that I frequent and pay attention to, and some of the questions I receive on occasion is, you know, it's not overt, it's not direct that they don't want to do statistics. They kind of know they need to, and they're not comfortable doing it. They want some, you know, make sure they're on the right track, the right tools, whatever. And then in presentations I've done at organizations, I say, so how many of you enjoyed your statistics class in college? Right? You and I did, Andre.
Right.
Right. Nobody. There's like one or two people out of 50 that'll say, yeah, I like that class. And they're the nerds of the nerds, kind of, is the perception that I get. And I don't know if it's the undergrad teaching of statistics, which I understand more recently from younger guys I've been running into, is that it's not a required class anymore.
Wow.
You know, so learning about the normal distribution and its use, or control charts, or process variation description, or all of that stuff, regression analysis. It may be mentioned in some of the engineering classes, say for mechanical engineers, but it's not a required sequence of courses anymore in some places.
It's interesting because I'm a member of an advisory board of one of the schools at Purdue University, and we were looking at the curriculum. And actually, our suggestion was to replace some of the calculus classes with statistics, because it seems like statistics is a lot more useful for majority of engineers than kind of some high level calculus where you do
partial differentiation. There's some people do, right? But we've got tools that pretty much build that in, where the statistics is a different way of thinking of something. So how's that? How did they get received? How did the recommendation? Did that?
Actually, they planning to implement it.
Oh, excellent!
Because everybody on the board was actually in agreement that statistics is probably more important. And we couldn't keep. I mean, if we couldn't keep everything. Because if you ask anybody on who's looking at the curriculum, oh, you need this, you need that. But again, you have only so many credit hours, so sometimes you need to basically substitute or compromise. But again, that went pretty well.
Well, that's good. You know, and one of the things there's the I'm trying to think of what the phrase was, but it was math is hard, and I think it was a misapplied early on, and somehow young women learned that, well, math is hard, even though there's many wonderful, talented, brilliant female mathematicians. It kind of became part of the culture, is that math is hard. And so now we have all these programs for STEM and for science and technology, really aimed at getting more women in the fields, to bring that talent back into it and get over that perception. That's a little different, though, is that when you walk down the aisle for the electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, and reliability engineers, it's predominantly men. Not exclusively by any means, but I think women are underrepresented. So I don't think the problem is the perception that math is hard. I think guys tend to have, and the engineering sciences tend to have, that statistics is hard.
And possible.
And so there's a little bit of avoidance of, oh, I didn't get it in college, and I don't understand why I need to know it now. And so, and I'm sure you've run into it as you're trying to explain how this fits a log normal distribution versus a Weibull distribution, for example, or a normal. And I see it as their eyes roll back. You know, these engineers and managers they understand why I'm talking about it, but they don't want to know the details. It's don't show me that part. I don't like that stuff. I mean, where'd that come from?
That's very true. And again, going back to reliability engineering and statistics, even if just look at my own experience with automotive, you look at different automakers and they approach this very differently. Like if you look at a validation test plan, some of the automakers would tell you, okay, you need to take 6 units and run them through, let's say, I don't know, 800 cycles of power temperature cycling, and then this vibration, 50 hours per axis, and then humidity, and when you complete, you're done. Mm-hmm. Without going into any statistics, anything else. But the other manufacturer automakers actually give you reliability target and say, okay, you need to demonstrate, let's say, 97% reliability with 50% confidence, which would require 22 samples to complete the test without any failures.
Right.
So even there, like different manufacturers, different companies may have totally different approach to this subject.
Well, it's true. And I think some of the companies and standards bodies have tried to take the deeper understanding of statistics out of it. So they say run 7 samples or run 77 samples from 3 batches. The various standards have different prescriptions, which is the result of some calculations, of some analysis of some sort. I always look at those, though, as a starting point. You still got to understand the failure mechanisms. You still got to understand the use environment, how you translate it. All of those other elements come into play. And that really gets into, well, what's my heavy user going to use? What's the light user going to do? What's the percentiles? So I think my main point here, Andre, is that when you mentioned that we want to design for the 95th percentile driver, is at that point, when you say 95th percentile, half the room just checked out. Right. And I think that's the issue, is that it's such a critical aspect of what we do as reliability engineers. And we bring to the table the skill set of not, you know, material science understanding or electrical engineering understanding or the software firmware interaction and design capabilities in those realms. Now, we may be individually as an engineer, we may have talents in any of those areas. But what we add to the discussion is, well, what is the 95th percentile and how do we know that? And that's not a made up number. It's not a made up person. It comes from the data.
It comes from the data and from statistical analysis. Even if you look at the definition of reliability, the classic definition of reliability says it's a probability that the item will survive this, and this without failure. So
that's right. That's on page one of your book, by the way. I looked it up.
Right. So reliability is the probability. So you got to know probability and statistics, and there's really no way around it. And I always, like when I teach the reliability seminar, I say, okay, there's a two integral parts to reliability. One is physics of failure, mm-hmm. where you kind of need to understand what happens. Another one is statistics, where you need to understand, okay, the data and usage and samples and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they both critical.
Definitely. Hopefully. All right. So did you go to the RAMS conference? It was a number of years ago. There's one of them that was very well attended in Las Vegas, and there was one in Reno, both gambling towns in Nevada.
Yes, and I made sure I was at both.
Okay.
Because I like to gamble.
You do. Now, how is that consistent with being a statistician?
Not very well.
So there's something else about gambling, not even though you know the odds, you know the house is going to win.
Yeah, so statistics, actually, I use statistics when I play blackjack, mm-hmm. for example. I know how to get as close as possible to those odds, because mm-hmm. I know the house will still win, but maybe if I have a little bit of luck, it can get me over that, say, not favorable statistics and maybe win some.
All right, so there's this little glimmer of maybe I'll get, you know, the above average for five hands in a row, and then I need to cash out and I'm in my head. There is a possibility, given a deep understanding of statistics, that I'll be above average.
There's a game in Las Vegas, which is called Blackjack Switch, uh-huh. where like you're playing two hands, where actually odds are very, very close. And I was able to win that game a few times.
Okay. Yeah, you know what's interesting is when we were in Reno in particular, because we were the only conference in the house in the building, right? It was a relatively small conference center. During the day the sessions were fairly well attended, but in the evening the casino really did notice, and they told me that they noticed an uptake in the number of people in. You know, this conference attended the gaming tables fairly well. They represented themselves well. Yet when I would talk to people, they say, no, I understand the odds. I can't do that. So at least you were like, no, there's even given that there's still a chance, a finite chance that I'll beat the house for a short time. And so it's that little bit of hope, I think, is what the gambling attraction is. It's just never worked for me, Andre.
Okay.
My data analysis class, we had to work out all the odds for poker. It was one of the homework assignments. And I'm like, oh, man, this is the chance of with five people playing, what's the chance that any given hand that you'll win, right? And it's not very good.
Yeah.
It's not very good. And we also, another homework, this guy, I think, was trying to just drive out gambling for us. So we did blackjack, we did roulette, and we did poker. and had to calculate all of the odds for all the different variations of that. And this was when I was just learning R, the S software, the now R software. And so
did you use a hypergeometric distribution?
We did.
That's used for card games.
That's right, because it's without replacement.
Right, without replacement.
That's right. And so it's, I think that's, if we've completely now convinced everybody to go gambling instead of doing statistics at work, I think we failed in our message here. But hopefully.
I think the message is statistics is important. If you are a reliability or validation engineer, we have those distinctions at our company. Mm-hmm. But I think you need to understand statistics to be able to be efficient at your work. And to summarize, basically, I would say three major areas where you need to use statistics. One is testing, where you need to determine sample sizes, reliability demonstration, confidence levels. The second one is something you mentioned, Fred, about understanding the usage, like user severity, and understand when you design your test what kind of user you're addressing in what we were talking about, 95th percentile or 99th percentile. And I think the third one is you need to be able to understand what kind of data, field data or failure data you're dealing with, and understand those distributions and make predictions how your product's going to behave in the field, or do Weibull analysis or just process the field return data.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, good
summary, Andre. We'll wrap it up there. And for the listeners, is, you know, where do you stand? Is statistics integral part of your life, and do you do it every day, and you're known as the statistician in the organization, or you don't have to admit it to us? But if you're in the more in the camp of, no, I don't use it, I don't like it, or I don't understand it, hopefully this is just a little nudge to say, hey, this is an important part of what we do and what we provide the organization. Plus, it does provide a lot of value back to the organization. So maybe take another look at it. And Andre, do you have any recommendations for a basic or starting place for people that want to learn about reliability statistics? I mean, is your book got good stuff in it?
I was going to say, besides my book, no, there's no other places. No, but I mean, our book, my book with Pat O'Connor, I think we did pretty decent job in explaining a basic statistics and how it applies to reliability, mm-hmm. Especially chapters 2 and 3. And I think a lot of reliability books actually have statistics in them. Mm-hmm. The only question is, it needs to be practical statistics, because if you some of the reliability textbooks, especially older books kind of published in, I don't know, the 80s and 90s, were almost exclusively statistics, and quickly you dive into pretty high level statistics which you may not necessarily need.
That's right.
for your everyday practice. So it's I don't know if I can probably make a list of recommendations. Nothing I can think of at this moment.
Yeah, but I agree. The Practical Reliability Engineering book has a couple of good chapters on it, and it is focused on. I mean, there's some definitions. You know, what a set is, what a union or a permutation calculation is, the confidence intervals, hypothesis test, a handful of others. It's a good starting point. And it has some of the basics of like non-homogeneous Poisson process, stuff like that. But it doesn't spend page after page doing the derivations.
Yeah, I always recommend books written by engineers as opposed to books written by college professors. I mean, nothing wrong with college professors, but I think engineers, they can relate to engineers reading their books. As opposed to, I mean, people who spend all their lives in academia. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So again, yeah,
I agree. Yeah, I definitely agree. So let's see if we can come up with a quick list of books. We'll add it to the show notes. And as a listener, let us know, you know, what your thoughts are. Is how do you approach reliability statistics, and and how does it received within your organization? I think that's probably a topic for another whole discussion, is how do you encourage the use of statistics beyond just your table, your bench. So we'll probably have to come back to that one at some point. But let's see what the listeners think and what kind of questions you have around that. And we'd love to have you join the conversation. So with that, Andre, I think we'll wrap it up.
Yeah. Thank you, Fred. All right. And we'll talk some more.
All right. Thanks, Andre. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.